This is Rural Health Leadership Radio.
Episode 125, a conversation with Joe Lampard, Vice President of HPSA Acumen.
The truth is in the data.
Welcome to the Rural Health Leadership Radio with your host, Dr. Bill Oxier. Each week, Dr. Oxier has a conversation with a different rural health leader to discuss what's working and what's not working in rural health, along with other topics of interest to rural health leaders. Rural Health Leadership Radio's goal is to improve health in rural America by providing a simple, no-cost means to share information and connect rural health leaders from around the country. And now, here's Dr. Oxier with today's guest.
Hi, everybody. I am your host, Dr. Bill Oxier, and welcome to Rural Health Leadership Radio. I would like to thank HPSA Acumen for underwriting the cost of today's episode. I also want to thank today's guest, Joe Lampard, for taking time out of his busy schedule to have a conversation with us today. Welcome to Rural Health Leadership Radio, Joe.
Thank you, Bill, and thank you very much for having me.
Well, I want to thank you for being here. Joe is the Vice President of HPSA Acumen, which is today's episode sponsor. So, Joe, tell us about yourself. Who is Joe Lampard? What's your story?
Well, I grew up in Western New York, located just south of Lake Erie in the Snow Belt. And we're actually in a big snow blizzard right now, 10 to 20 inches over the next 24 hours. I played cello all throughout school, and that's actually how I met my wife in high school. And we have two wonderful kids, ages 4 and 1, and you know, we've just gotten out of the trenches with that newborn baby phase. So
congratulations.
Having a good time. Thank you. Thank you, Bill. We're having a good time over here, and you know, with our, you know, growing up here, we have the extensive friend and family networks, and it's a great place to live and settle down. Aside from my personal life, I do a lot of traveling for work, and you know, that's actually where we first met, was in San Antonio.
Yes,
right.
Yes, at an ARC meeting.
Yep, at one of the. That's right. And I see a lot of the people too that have been on your show at the various conferences throughout the U.S., such as Kate Hill and Bill Finnerfrock and John Gill. You know, everybody's moving around, staying really busy, and trying their best to share their specialized knowledge with those providing care in the medical communities.
Of course, Joe, we only have the rock stars of rural health leadership on this program. So, you know, you are among the elite now.
That is right. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Bill.
So, Joe, why did you choose a career path in healthcare?
Well, my father was a physician.
Okay.
And, you know, I saw the value of healthcare and how people, you know, that were really broken, you know, would have stayed broken, but they could be lifted up, you know, if given another chance at the American dream through better health. And also my mother, Marika, she was a hospital planner, so a family of healthcare. She completed her, you know, first HPSA analysis actually for a health system in Erie, Pennsylvania, and another one in Buffalo, New York, back in the 90s. And she really realized the windfall it brought with the recruitment and retention efforts and the state and federal backing. And so it was through completing some of those larger HPSA projects and fairly decently populated cities that she realized the benefit and how she could make the process you know, more efficient and tailored to those health systems needing help with that recruitment and retention.
So it sounds like your mom and dad both rubbed off on you in different ways to choose a career path in healthcare.
That's correct.
Yeah. So why focus on the underserved?
Well, they say if you don't have your health, you know, you don't have anything. So, you know, so often we don't appreciate these things until they're gone. You know, when health becomes a problem, it's harder not only for the individual, but also for the family as a whole to bounce back. So there are these areas in the U.S. that have difficulty in attracting and retaining enough healthcare providers. Many times it's rural. Sometimes it can be urban, especially in the poorer areas. And that can give you a lower quality of life. So our goal is to strengthen access to care in these underserved communities. And it's a wonderful feeling, and it's a great mission.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for the work that you're doing there. You know, the name of this program, Joe, is Rural Health Leadership Radio, emphasis on leadership. What is your definition of leadership?
My definition of a leader would be someone who has a vision and a path forward to get there. So a clear vision, and it's something that is better than what is currently being offered. So they know clearly what the end goal is and the tools they need in order to achieve that outcome. They're able to share that vision with others and then have buy-in and work together to getting to that final goal.
I appreciate the adjectives you used about vision, having clarity of vision, having the tools needed for that vision, and sharing that vision. So thank you for sharing that definition with us. Can you give us an overview of your company in the community that you serve?
So we have been analyzing shortage areas for over 15 years. We currently are working in more than half of the states throughout the U.S. for clients across the spectrum. So from podiatric partnerships all the way through health systems that own hundreds of hospitals. We heavily focus on the federal HIPSA program, but we also help clients make use of all the benefits tied to HIPSA. We help with setting up of rural health clinics and walking providers through the loan forgiveness applications or site validations, and we help in other shortage analyses. One of our specialties is in the collection of the survey data. So we have teams of surveyors that full-time call medical offices to see exactly how the physicians are spending their time. So they'll know by the end of the call the payer mix, the time they're taking for lunch, how many hours at the nursing home or at the hospital or teaching or precepting. And it's completing that survey in a small window of 1 to 2 months, where you're able to gain a very clear picture of the supply of primary mental or dental care. And it's through that precise data that we're able to assess the severity of the shortage and to which population groups the shortage persists.
Okay. Can you explain what HIPSA?
Yes. So, and sometimes I take for granted that everybody doesn't know what HIPSA is.
Okay.
But HIPSA stands for Health Professional Shortage Area, and it's a federal designation to attract, recruit, and retain clinicians to underserved areas. There are three different cohorts of HIPSA. So you have your primary care, your mental health, and your dental health. And each one of those cohorts has three main categories. I'm going to exclude governor's HIPSA for simplicity. There's a geographic HIPSA. So geographic HIPSA would mean just in general, there is a shortage of primary care, or in general, there's a shortage of mental health. So the general population is experiencing a shortage. But there are also specialty population HIPSAs. So you can segment out the population and look more specifically at maybe the low-income population or the Medicaid population or the uninsured, or if you have a large enough migrant farm worker population, you could prove a shortage that there's not enough primary or mental care to that population group. And lastly, there are facility HIPSAs. So your rural health clinics or federally qualified health centers, prisons, can have a HIPSA that's just for their facility, showing that the people they're serving have a shortage, and then they receive a designation for the facility. And then each one of those HIPSAs has benefits tied to it. So there's state and federal loan forgiveness, there are visa waivers for foreign physicians, There's the ability to set up rural health clinics. There are state and federal grants. There's expedited physician licensing for out-of-state physicians. However, the geographic HPSA is the only one to offer a 10% Medicare bump to all MDs and DOs.
Okay. So you may have answered this question already then by what you just said there. You know, if you get this HPSA designation, what are the benefits of that?
The main benefits are the state and federal loan forgiveness. So this is loan forgiveness. It can be inpatient or outpatient. Primary care physicians, it could be specialists, it could be your RNs, you know, at the nursing home or hospice. There are various loan forgiveness programs for the spectrum of clinicians, depending on whether you're for-profit, not-for-profit, inpatient, outpatient, whether you're seeing patients or if you're in an administrative role. There, you know, a lot of it's based on the state you're in. So there are plenty of programs out there for you to communicate the value to your medical network in a tax-free vehicle where you can lock them into that position. They're going to stay. They'll be happy that they're, you know, having their medical education debt forgiven. And you have them locked into that position for at least the next 2-3 years. And many of these programs you can reapply year after year. So that's a huge benefit to the HPSA. As I mentioned, that geographic HPSA has a 10% Medicare bonus. So the study is based on primary care, but once designated, all of the physicians will start generating a 10% Medicare bonus. So even optometrists and chiropractors, podiatrists and your surgeons would all start generating the incentive payments moving forward, just recognizing that there is, in general, a shortage of physicians in that community. I mentioned there are grants. There are plenty of state and federal grants for developing residency programs and administrative traineeship. There are, of course, the ability to set up your rural health clinics. So once you have that shortage in place, you can convert primary care outpatient clinics to rural health clinics for heightened Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement with a focus on the advanced practitioners delivering the care. Other than that, you know, visa waivers, a lot of rural hospitals count on visa waivers. If you cannot fill a position with an American physician for a 6-month period or more, then you can look for a foreign physician that's finished their residency program that you would like to recruit. And so each state has 30 slots. If you are in a HPSA, you can apply for one of those. And a third of those slots could be for specialists. So if you're in a HPSA, keep that in mind, and you're having difficulty recruiting a specialist, that program's there for you or primary care physicians.
So you help clinics, hospitals, whatever, get this HPSA designation, and then you help them take advantage of the benefits by having that HPSA designation, right? Have I got it straight?
That is correct. So we help with the study and analysis, and then you know, submit that data and we work with the state and federal government to review and verify that data. And once that's completed, the HPSA is put in place. And then for the next 1 to 3 years, we help with applying for the benefits and managing those incentives moving forward.
So I'm sure you've got a few success stories where you've done that. Any that you'd like to share with us today?
Okay. Well, you know, a lot of them, the big success stories are where, you know, at first we're looking at the area and the numbers are close, but they're just not quite working. And the client, you know, the major healthcare provider, whether that's a large medical group or a medical university or a hospital in the community, is saying, look, we really believe we have a shortage. So we'll go to the area and meet with them and really get to know the area. And one time we were out in Oregon, the state of Oregon out in the coast, and I believe it was Astoria. And they really believed that they had a persistent primary care shortage. And we were in the area and, you know, visiting some of the offices and the outpatient facilities. And in the distance, we heard this loud foghorn going. And after two or three times, we looked at the administrator that was showing us around and said, "What is that? Is that a ship?" And he said, "Yes, these tourist ships, these huge tourist ships, they come up to the port and they dock here for a few days. And we have tens of thousands of people that will come into the community for a visit on their way up north." And so we said, "Really, we need to look at those tourist numbers." We looked at those numbers. And even though the visit was very short, the number of ships throughout the year did give them an added tourist population. And it was just enough to add to that population to provide a ratio that pushed it across the threshold, and we were able to establish the geographic HPSA. So there's one story of, you know, some adversity and being able to, you know, prove that there is a persistent shortage. And once you're designated, you're in for 3 years and until you have to prove again whether the shortage has been alleviated. Another story that comes to mind, we were in central New York in this area of Delhi, and the drive times were, so you have to prove there's a shortage in the rational service area. So you have to prove that there's a shortage in this township or this county, but you also have to prove that the surrounding areas within a reasonable drive time are not alleviating that shortage. And the drive times were getting into other areas that had enough doctors, and it was shooting down the project. So we were in that community and we were driving through there, and these rolling mountains, rolling road, meandering roads, and the snow was falling, and we were saying, "Look, there is no way you can be driving down this road at, you know, 45 to 55 miles an hour. We're here going 20 to 30 miles an hour. We need to see if we can adjust this drive time." And so we met with the sheriff and we asked him, "In the winter, is this even a possibility?" And he said, "Absolutely not. I'm willing to put it on paper, willing to sign off on it." And we brought that to the Department of Health and they reviewed it, agreed with it, and ruled out that contiguous area. And we were able to get the designation through.
Excellent. So that shows you the importance of listening for foghorns, in addition to the navigational aid, as well as driving conditions on those country roads. So can you talk to us a bit about how Acumen fits in with the process of securing a designation?
So, and that's a good question. We're asked that often because, you know, there is already a government system to identify these areas. You have been assessed in the past, you know, on a state by state level. And how we fit in is we can provide a custom study of the shortage in your specific area today. So, the truth is in the data. And we're experts at gathering this exact data so we can create a current picture that shows the true shortage for your various population groups. That assessment oftentimes is the difference between receiving the designation or not. And it often means the difference between perhaps a low scoring designation, ruling out federal loan forgiveness, or not obtaining the desired benefits tied to the type of HPSA that would have most impacted your medical community and your recruitment and retention efforts.
Okay, so what's the main reason someone contacts you for a potential designation?
Well, if they recently lost their HPSA, I need a designation for maybe recruitment of visa waiver physicians or to move or set up a new rural health clinic, that's often why we're contacted. Okay. They're saying, "Look, we need a HPSA today. You know, this survey was just completed and we're no longer in a HPSA since we started this process." Or, you know, we recruit a visa waiver doctor every year and that's coming up in the fall and we can't even apply because in July the designation was withdrawn. Can you do a quick study and see if the numbers work? You know, are we and work with state and federal government to have this reassessed.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense.
I guess, Bill, also there's you know, sometimes the entity, the healthcare provider, the hospital is looking for, you know, their score is on the threshold of whether or not they're going to receive federal loan forgiveness. And sometimes they'll contact us to see, is there anything we can do about increasing the score 1 or 2 points? And there are two variables to increasing your score. It is difficult, but your population to provider ratio will give you double points. So that's a quick way to earn points if you can prove there's a greater shortage. And then also nearest source of non-designated care. So kind of looking at that and seeing, you know, how close really is the nearest physician that's not in a HIPSA that's willing to accept maybe, you know, Medicaid patients or accept new patients? You know, how far out are we going? And so looking at that again often can give you, you know, 1 or 2 additional points depending on when the HIPSAs were set up. So that's another reason people will contact us.
Okay. All right, good. So what kind of responses have you gotten from clients that you've helped out?
We create a solid return on investment. So, you know, they're going to invest some money with us, and our goal is going to perhaps be to turn it into tax-free loan forgiveness, create marketing materials for them to get the word out so that the eligible facilities can post a, you know, a 2-page pamphlet showing, you know, what's the program? Am I eligible? How much are we talking about? And what are my next steps? And then the next steps for the providers would be to contact us, and we would walk them through when they're going to be applying, what documents they'll need. We can review documents for them and really make sure that they're maximizing those benefits of the medical education loan forgiveness, or whether it's, you know, the potential score increase or a different type of HIPSA that would better target their needs and their shortage. So with that, our clients really appreciate working with us, having that expertise where, you know, they think of another question and they pick up the phone and we're here at, you know, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. They can get a hold of someone and have any and all of those questions answered, you know, immediately.
Okay, very good. So I think in your normal business day, you are talking to CEOs and CFOs. Is that correct? People in the C-suite?
Yes.
So
correct.
Why should they talk to you?
I think most of them would know if they needed to talk to us. They seem to have a pretty good grasp on, you know, whether they have a primary or a mental shortage, or whether the HIPSA could help them. And so, you know, if they're having problems with any of the benefits or attracting well-qualified providers, or they've lost their HIPSA, they'd be looking into that and, you know, and finding us. With the management of the benefits, we had a health system in North Carolina that over the last 4 years, we were able to walk, you know, providers through the federal loan forgiveness at $6 million of tax-free loan forgiveness. So that's helping with, wow, 30 site validations and getting the word out and doing presentations and then, you know, answering the phone calls and the questions of each provider, whether they're new or they've been there for a while, will have specific questions to their cases and their needs. So, you know, it's in communicating, you know, that great value that the HIPSA can bring that we see our clients renew with these contracts year after year.
Very interesting. So, Joe, you've seen a lot take place in rural health. What scares you the most about the future of rural health?
Well, overall, I'm very optimistic about, you know, the improvement of rural health. If I had to say what scares me the most, it'd probably be the financial health of hospitals and rural communities. You have a few providers wearing multiple hats and, you know, trying to manage all of the different needs of this rural population. And, they don't have, the hospitals don't have as deep of pockets as the larger hospitals and health systems. So what we're seeing, what I'm seeing is these larger health systems buying up the smaller rural hospitals to funnel the specialty care back to them. And when that happens, I mean, it is great because you have the economies of scale, you know, such as one payer, one payroll, or one billing company, and, you know, better bond rates, a greater purchasing power. But we see the specialists kind of in a vacuum be pulled out of the rural communities and up to the hub. And then as well with that, the patients. So the patients now have to leave for specialty work more than when the hospital was purchased. And a lot of them being, you know, the specialists just kind of being pulled out of the rural communities. And, you know, it does help with recruitment of primary care providers and advanced practitioners. But I guess that's what, you know, what scares me, is to see how this all pans out as all these mergers and acquisitions are going on.
Thank you for sharing that. So let me lean on your optimistic viewpoint here. What excites you the most about the future of rural health?
Okay. Well, what excites me the most is our innovations like telemedicine. You know, when you can see a specialist from your home, or you can see a primary care physician for a quick script, and you're not missing work, you know, half a day work going into the office. You know, telemedicine really is incredible for rural communities. I think electronic medical records will have a huge impact as more and more people are coming online with sharing those records between consulting physicians, or also, you know, not worrying about them going up in smoke if the place, you know, burns down. And then, of course, transportation is fantastic for rural communities, not just cars and ambulances, but, you know, helicopters, being able to have them scoop you up and bring you to, you know, major facilities that can treat, you know, chronic problems or emergency medical issues as they arise and need to be dealt with, you know, immediately. So those are some fantastic innovations in rural health.
Yeah, it's amazing all the innovations that take place in the rural healthcare setting. So thanks for sharing that with us. You know, Joe, it's the time has flown by here. We've covered a lot of territory in the brief time we've been talking. If our listeners only take one thing away from our conversation today, what should that be?
I would say knowledge is power. Knowing the exact supply of medical services in your community and region is the first step to addressing your shortages. Once you have that supply and demand picture ironed out, you not only know who you need to recruit and where to strategically place them, but you can also identify tools and resources to alleviate those shortages. For instance, the HPSA designation brings a number of these benefits to help in the recruitment and retention process, student loan forgiveness, enhanced Medicare payments, ability to recruit foreign physicians on visa. But you have to know about the program in order to utilize it. And there's great efficiency and precision in knowing the ins and outs, so you can do something right the first time in half the time. So I think having an expert working with you should optimize your chances of designation and your benefits from the designation. And there's power in having exact data on the supply in the region to truly identifying those shortages and therefore establishing the best quality of process and designation moving forward.
Joe Lampard, Vice President of HPSA Acumen, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for underwriting the cost of today's episode. And thank you for sharing your knowledge and experience about the HPSA program.
Hey, thank you, Bill. And it's always, always good to talk to you.
And I'm not positive about this, but I think you may be the first cello player that's ever appeared on Rural Health Leadership Radio.
That's great. Well, maybe we can end with a cello sonata.
Yeah, that would be great. I want to thank all of you out there for listening today, too. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please go to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, whatever your favorite podcast app might be, and subscribe to Rural Health Leadership Radio. And if you'd like to continue the conversation of leadership in rural health, you can also join our LinkedIn group called Rural Health Leadership Radio. And while you're on Facebook today, Take a look at our Facebook page, and we love likes, so give us a like. Until next week, let's keep working to improve rural health, one conversation at a time.
If you would like to connect with today's guest, please send an email with your contact information to bill@billoxier.com. If you would like to be a guest or suggest someone else as a guest, have a question you would like to ask, or simply want to contact Rural Health Leadership Radio, please use that same email address, bill@billoxier.com. That's bill@billoxier.com. You can also visit our website at www.rhlradio.com.
And we'd ask that you please support our sponsor, the Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health. The Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health's mission is to improve rural health, one leader at a time.